Welcome again. It's amazing to see all of you, and especially a very warm welcome to our speaker. I will introduce our amazing speaker in a few minutes. Everybody, my name is Dewin, and I'm very glad, I'm honored to be your host today. The Rotary Club of Worldwide Impact is part of the organization of Rotary International, made up of a global network of 1.1 million neighbors, friends, leaders, and especially problem solvers in more than 46,000 clubs around the world, doing service above self, locally, globally, and in our case, in the digital world. As a Rotary Club, we approach every conversation as if we are on a shared learning journey. Our goal is to connect and also to hear fascinating, inspiring speakers, often with a message focused on the power of ideas that change lives and ultimately the world, and bring a little bit of inspiration that will allow you to think about how you can make the difference as well. We're glad you have joined us tonight, today, this morning, afternoon, in every part of the world, and we hope you enjoy how we explore technology in the service of others. Today, our guest connects with us from Peoria, Arizona. Cherie Sheets is the immediate past president of the Rotary Club of Peoria North and the current volunteer and partnership manager at Shelterbox USA, an organization founded to provide emergency shelter to people affected by disasters and humanitarian crises around the world. As part of the Shelterbox team and in her role as a Rotarian, Cherie is fulfilling her childhood purpose. From the age of 7, she believed she was created to help to save the world. Indeed, today she feels she can confidently say she is doing exactly that. We're excited to have you on, Cherie. Thank you so much for accepting our invitation, and I'll hand the mic over you.
Thank you, and thank you all for having me. Yes, I am Cherie Sheets, the Volunteer and Partnerships Manager, Shelterbox USA, but I'm also a fellow Rotarian, having just served as president for Peoria North. Today, I want to introduce you to who Shelterbox is and what makes us the experts in disaster relief and what sets us apart in this world. I want to start with where this all came from, though. You mentioned, you know, the power of Rotary, the power of an idea, and that's what Shelterbox is. So in 1999, the Rotary International president had challenged clubs to come up with the Millennial Project, and the Rotary Club of Helston, Lizard, and Truro, United Kingdom of Cornwall, they made it their Millennial Project to respond to disasters because they could see a gap in disaster relief. They saw that food and medical needs were being met, but nobody specialized in shelter at the time. They made it a goal to respond to 10 disasters that Rotary year. And at the end of the Rotary year, the project still was needed, but they didn't have the capacity to sustain the project within their club. The year 2000, the organization Shelterbox was established, separate entity from Rotary, but we continued to use our roots and relationships with Rotarians to help us reach the families that we would be serving. It wouldn't be until 2012 that we were named Rotary International's Global Project Partner in Disaster Relief, but I am proud to share that as of 2022, we remain their only project partner in disaster relief. And John Huco and our CEO, Sam, just signed our renewal partnership in Houston just this June, right at the convention before the new Rotary year kicked off. Now, Shelterbox has been able to serve more families over the years by becoming more efficient, being innovative, and evolving in order to shelter more people in need. Many know us by the green box pictured behind me, but we are more than that. And our experience has taught us that there is not just one solution for every disaster. So while we started with the green box, we've evolved to have a suite of solutions. And this involved an innovation. It comes from feedback from the families we've served and advancement in technology. we can look at our water purification. Just as one example, we started with chlorine tablets. We moved to the Life Straw, then the Thirst Aid, and just this year began deploying the Grif-Aid, all of which are to best serve those families who have been impacted by disaster. Same could be said for our tents. We started with a green-brown tent. We now have a standard relief tent you see pictured at the bottom left. But we have 5 different tents that could go out into the field just depending on that specific climate and the need there. So depending on that specific disaster, it's our response team member volunteers who are going to work with the local community. Perhaps it's an in-country partner because it's not safe to deploy a response team member. Regardless, they're going to talk to the local community members to determine the specific need. Now, the changes we've made over the years have allowed us to reach these families faster. And now that we're not sending the whole traditional box to everybody after every disaster, but instead customizing aid packages for those needs, we're able to reserve the resources that those families don't need, keep them in one of our pre-positioned warehouses around the globe, and save it for a family impacted by a different disaster who is going to have that need. This change also helps us to best respect the donor dollar, those who are supporting our mission and furthering it, helping us to shelter more families. Now, while the aid has improved because of advancement technology and the feedback from families, how we distribute the aid may have changed because we'll now send in pallets of customized aid packages. I'll tell you though, the mission has never changed. Now, there are a lot of different disaster charities that exist right now, but let's talk about what sets ShelterBox apart. First thing is we are focused. 22 years, the mission has never creeped. We remain focused on providing emergency shelter to the most vulnerable families who have been impacted by disaster. We have served in this sector for 22 years. We know it's made the biggest difference to communities in the past, and we exist to help people have a place to call home today. And we can do this because we're listening. It's the people that we support who are guiding our work. So after disasters or in conflict zones around the globe, it's the families who are telling us what's going to make the biggest difference in their lives. We listen and we do everything we possibly can to make that happen. So yes, that might mean providing emergency shelter solutions. Perhaps it's a customized aid package of non-food items. It could also mean non-standard items, items we don't keep stocked in our warehouses around the globe, but items we procure in country to help families. As they've said, those needs exist. Maybe it's cash assistance for families like we're doing in Moldova right now for the Ukraine refugees who have crossed over to the border. It could also mean running a training course, though, to help the communities build reliable weatherproof structures. Maybe it's letting the local government organization know what the communities need. And sometimes it's a combination of those three things. But we're listening when we go in, or we're going to come back, we're going to listen again. We want to learn from each deployment. So we will send in a team whose sole purpose for that deployment is to monitor our work, evaluate that work against our objective upon deployment, hold us accountable to our mission, and to learn how we can do better the next time. Everything we do is guided by the same goal: help families rebuild after disaster. So to make sure that we are doing that as effectively as possible, we are constantly questioning what we do. We are exploring what we can do differently. We ask ourselves how we can do better. Now, I'll add, we don't just innovate for the sake of it, but we do put innovation at the heart of our work, always looking for ways to improve. And honestly, we feel that failing to do that would mean failing the people we exist to support. So by listening to people in every disaster where we work, we make sure that people are in the best possible position to start strong as they piece their lives back together. One thing that sets us apart, and honestly, my favorite thing, is that we go further. You are going to find ShelterBox serving communities that are the last mile, hard to reach communities. We exist to serve those who are often overlooked by others. This image here is from Malawi when we distributed aid following Cyclone Idai. You might remember in 2019 that Cyclone Idai powered over Southern Africa. In fact, the coast of Mozambique was hit pretty hard, and the media really showcased Mozambique. Many aid organizations flocked to Mozambique, to those major cities, because of the media attention that was being received. But Shelterbox went in further. We went into Malawi, where the need was equally great, but they were not seeing a response. You see, we have a set of criteria. We call it our decision to respond criteria. And this criteria is necessary to hold us accountable to our mission to shelter the most vulnerable families who have been impacted by disaster. Going back to what sets us apart, we're a global organization. So we have our headquarters. It was established in Truro, Cornwall, England, and we have affiliates like Shelterbox USA. So our headquarters exist to make the decisions of where we might deploy. Also, who is going to be deployed? They're the ones that recruit, train, and deploy our response team members. Affiliates like Shelterbox USA, who I work for, we exist to raise awareness and funds to further this mission. But you know what else makes us global? Of course, being project partners with Rotary International. It is oftentimes Rotarians who are helping us connect with local communities faster when disaster strikes. If Rotary is in that country, we're on the phone with them before we even deploy an assessment team. They're giving us by moment needs and assessments before we even arrive. And then we get in country and Rotary is helping to secure translators, beds for our response team members to sleep in, and warm meals. Since 2000, Shelterbox has worked to get aid into the far to reach places. And that has meant loading up the largest aircraft in the world like we did in 2004 for the Indian Ocean tsunami. We're gonna get aid into country by any means possible. It's gonna look different every time too. Just as every disaster is assessed with our decision to respond criteria, our responses look different. There isn't just this template that we follow when a disaster hits a certain country. So maybe it's by aircraft, maybe it's by barge, maybe it is on the backs of our response team members and the local volunteers we're partnering with. Maybe it's not safe to bring it through a port, but instead we have to drop it via helicopter. But we're going to get aid into country by any means possible. And yes, that has meant getting it into some of the most extreme conflict areas of the world. While Shelterbox originally began just responding to weather-related or geological events, we took what we learned and we applied that knowledge to help shelter refugees around the globe. And with the help of Rotarians like yourself or other individual donors, perhaps foundations, family foundations, we have been able to respond to more than 300 disasters in over 100 countries. We have sheltered well over 2.2 million people since the year 2000 when we started. And because of our work in war-torn countries, we have been nominated for the Nobel Peace Prize 2 times, once in 2018 and once in 2019. These nominations came, though, because we are striving to keep these families and communities together. We seek to increase feelings of stability and togetherness during a time of unprecedented global conflict and displacement. But that's just from me. Let's hear from the families that we've served, and let's hear from them how receiving Shelterbox aid put them on a pathway of recovery after they were devastated by disaster. When we go back and we're talking with these families time and time again, they are telling us it's more than just a shelter. We are helping them create a home. Think about that for a moment. They're telling us that they have a place to spend time with their family now, that they're getting a better night's sleep. Their children are playing. They're laughing. Parents are working. They feel safer and secure now. They have privacy, time to themselves. And they tell us this is a place with a future. Additionally, these families have said that we're helping them learn and pass down skills and knowledge. We are committed to lasting change. And as I've said, we will train people to build homes with the aid items that we've provided to them. So we'll work with communities, or we'll showcase techniques that we've learned all over the globe, but we are going to teach them to build and repair reliable weatherproof homes. And then these families tell us after we've done that, they are then teaching their kids, their grandkids, so that should disaster strike again, they're more prepared. And I already said, the kids are playing, laughing, parents are going back to work. I can't gloss over that. That is huge. Helping people return to work. We can see that emergency shelter is deeply connected to livelihood. When these families have a place to call home, they're telling us they can now shift their focus back to earning a living. So we see that people are working, they're tending crops, they're working trades. This is Esther from the Minnow camp in Cameroon. She had her shelter kit, and after she no longer needed it as temporary shelter, she turned it into a place to run her seamstress business out of. Many of the beneficiaries that we serve will recycle these goods back within the community, turning these temporary shelters into shops and workshops. One family I know of harvested honey. They put their tent in the middle of a tropical forest area. Around it were the beehives, and they would take the hive pieces, the inserts, into the tent to harvest the honey. I know Rotary, with our area of focus to protect the environment, Shelterbox is doing our part to make sure that, one, we don't have any single-use plastics in our kit. Two, that our aid really is being reused within the community. We don't take any aid back, so we do trust that these families are turning these into workshops. And time again, as we go into country to talk with these families, we are seeing that. So now we've got a home, a place with the future. We've got kids who are laughing and playing, parents who are working. We are helping rebuild these communities. And a strong community is crucial to building resilience, lifting the spirit of the people living in it following disaster. We help communities stay together by carrying out these training sessions I mentioned, by teaching them how to use the aid items, making sure that every family receives the aid that they need to help the kids return to play and the parents return to work. During this time, I think it's important to just briefly say that yes, COVID did impact our work, but we didn't stop. We scaled up our efforts, in fact, to serve more families who have fled due to conflict and were living in refugee camps. We brought more shelter solutions to those camps so these families could isolate and protect themselves against this disease. We also added soap and water basins so that the families could practice proper hygiene. We made sure that both our partners who were distributing, because it was not safe to deploy response team members, we made sure our partners had PPE, they had masks. We modified distribution practices to make sure that we weren't serving 100 families a day, maybe 50 families, and they were 6 feet apart, properly social distanced to protect the families that we've served and our partners who are executing that distribution for us. This wouldn't be possible not only without our supporters, but it also wouldn't be possible without our volunteers. Volunteers like Raquel are out here sharing the ShelterBox story to help further this mission. There are multiple different volunteer roles available within this organization, and everyone is critical to helping us shelter more families. And I do believe I've gone over my time today. So I just want to thank you all so much for allowing me to share my ShelterBox story with you. It's an organization that I am proud to serve. And if there are time for questions, I'll open the floor up now.
Wow, thank you. Thank you so much. I think we can all have a virtual hug and a big applause to to Sherry for sharing these amazing and very meaningful projects from Shelterbox. Incredible, incredible work. What an amazing impact around the world, definitely. Now we open the session for questions and answers. Please, if you have any questions, you are all welcome to add them on the chat box, or if you want to raise your hand virtually, you can use it also in the display icons here using the toolbar. And we now start. We have our first question. Colette, welcome.
Thank you. In one of the first slides, you showed the content of the Shelterbox. I did see some items I could recognize, but also some I didn't know what it is. Can you explain me more about it?
Absolutely. So in our core 8 items, we have a kitchen set. We have a water filtration system, water carrier, mosquito net, tarpaulin, solar light, your basic tools, the box itself, rope, fixings, and then if you get the shelter kit, you're going to get the tools, fixings, and a tarpaulin. We also have warm, thick blankets and ground mats. Those are considered our core 8 items.
Thank you very much. I did recognize some of the things you knew. For how many people is one of the shelter box? How many can live in the place? Or how big is the tent?
So the shelter box, the traditional shelter box, is meant to serve a family of 5. So if a traditional shelter box is deployed and is considered the core 8 item of choice for that deployment, we're going to distribute that to up to a family of 5. A tent, our standard relief tent, sleeps 4 to 6, but we do have a UN spec tent that now can sleep up to 10. And again, all of these are temporary emergency response solutions and are never meant to be somebody's permanent residence. The life expectancy of these units, the tent, we would like to see somebody living in it no more than 6 months to a year. We do know that families live in it much longer than that if there is not a better place for them to go, an example being Haiti. But these are just to get them to that recovery phase. I gave you a little bit more information than you asked for. Sometimes my mind gets going and I just start talking.
Thank you very, very much.
Thank you, Colette.
Thank you, Colette, for your question. Now we also have a question from our dear friend, Mustafa.
Following up with the map that you showed, I see that you are deployed in Somalia. And for the current time, with that heat wave that's hitting all over the world, the really kind of suffering like shortage in food and water. So what is the action for Shelterbox for the current time towards this disaster?
Yes, Somalia, we are specifically looking at the drought that is taking place there and helping to assess what shelter solutions we can help. You know, we are in the planning phase there with Somaliland. So we are looking to see, are there shelter solutions that we can provide? Are there other core 8 items that make sense for what's taking place in Somalia? I know that in addition to the drought, there is tensions, there's political tensions there as well, or there is insurgency that takes place. We won't be doing any of the food or, you know, bringing water into country. But we may work alongside other disaster relief agencies within the United Nations cluster to help ensure that families receive all the things that they need, not just the emergency shelter. So we do work with other aid organizations when we know multiple organizations are arriving in country, just to ensure that we are helping the whole person. So making sure that they do have resources like the food and the water, not just a shelter solution. We may not be the providers, but we're going to let the other local government agencies or the partner we're working with, like the United Nations, know who else might need to come in after us or beside us.
Okay, thanks. And is there any kind of a specific, I would say, place to donate or anything, or just like still goes through Shelterbox and then that would be directed to whatever the places, or do you have like a specific causes like we can donate towards that, or it just like we can go to Shelter Box and donate?
So we don't have a restricted fund created for Somalia. We create restricted funds when there is a need, like Ukraine, when Ukraine originally, the crisis escalated in February and we knew we needed to do an emergency response. What will happen with Somalia, Bangladesh, and other what we call protracted responses, those are, we plan, we create a budget and a timeline, and then a fundable initiative is established. And then that comes out of our unrestricted funding wherever ShelterBox needs it most. So short answer, you would go make a donation to ShelterBox and know that we are a 4-star rated charity. So your donation is being put to work to help these families. If a restricted fund is available, it will be offered as a drop down when you're donating. But right now, one does not exist for Somalia.
Okay, got it. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much for that important question. And of course, the power of collaboration is very, very important. As a follow-up question from our friend Patrick, very interestingly, what you mentioned, how can we support ShelterBox as a club and how we can also support as individual Rotarians?
So clubs and individual Rotarians, are encouraged to clubs to decide if they would like to donate towards ShelterBox efforts. So that could be done with like a board decision, but yes, funding. It is monetary support that we need to ensure that we have the aid items stocked on our shelves, and that, you know, having just done a large deployment in Ukraine, restocking those aid items, just ensuring we're reaching as many families as possible. Rotarians, same, you know, giving what makes sense and what you feel you would want to give to help support the cause.
Definitely. Thank you. Thank you so much for guiding us in so many diverse ways in which we can also support as the big family we all are. Another question, very interestingly, and I think it's the power of ShelterBox is it's so impactful around the world. At this point, over these last 22 years, what is the project or the deployment that has made the biggest impression on you, and why? Could you share with us a little bit more?
Wow, that's a question I've never had before. Honestly, I don't think I could isolate any one particular response because I have access to the stories. And this is public. I'll type it in the chat when I finish answering your question. But we have this asset bank where we can go to find stories of those that we've served and images. And I think just any time I know that my role in the organization, which is every day a family is served, and I hear the story of recovery, and I see these families who, you know, I'm from America, so I feel like I live a very fortunate lifestyle, and the families that we serve, their shelter, that the home that they call home, that would be like a shack here in America, or it would be, you know, considered poverty in America. And these families, they experience disaster, they lose everything, and they're already insanely resilient because they've survived the disaster itself. Then they're sleeping under trees, maybe going into evacuation centers and camps, and just every day trying to make do for their family, to show up, to be there, to be moms, to be fathers, to be kids while overcoming this tragic event. And then ShelterBox comes along and we give them essential items, whether it be shelter solutions or cash assistance, just enough. You know, recently we gave some cash to someone who bought some livestock so that they can begin to up increase their livestock business. And just hearing the stories of these families being like, just this little bit that was given to me brings me hope, gives me planning for a future. So there is not just one. I think it's everyone. It's every time that we're able to help a family. But let's flip that on its head a little bit, because the reason why I'm motivated every day and inspired every day, not just for the families that we've served, but the families we couldn't serve, because there is a limited supply. There is a finite amount of aid available. And there are times where we have to decide and make very hard decisions who is going to receive the aid, where we know in our hearts that the people we're saying no to because we don't have enough aid are equally vulnerable. So yeah, it's everything about ShelterBox.
Wow. Thank you so much for sharing with us. It's incredible. It's amazing all the hard work that you are doing around the world. I'm really, really interested to know a little bit more about what challenges have you faced in the last years, and what strategies is ShelterBox currently implementing to overcome those challenges, if I may ask?
No, I mean, and I'm not personally, I've never deployed, I'm not a response team member, and it's because that's too emotional of a job for me, because I would want to give aid to everybody, and having to hand select who's going to get it, I don't think I can make that decision. But when we look at challenges, COVID was a challenge, right? So at the end of 2019, we could see the pandemic on the horizon. But for us, it was more than just COVID. It was the risk of a disaster within a disaster, because when COVID reached a refugee camp, it's going to spread like wildfire, which is why we scaled up our efforts. Additionally, when you look at the increase of conflict around the world, so now we have a safety risk. So we, in those areas, we find partners who are already established in country. They know how to navigate the climate in those conflict areas. And we work with them maybe remotely so that they can assess and execute our work just as we would. Looking at Haiti, let's talk about Haiti that happened a year ago. When that earthquake happened, it looked different than it did when Hurricane Matthew hit in 2016, and when the 2010 earthquake hit. The political climate was different. We had to make our base camp on the border, over the border in the Dominican Republic, and then kind of work with partners very discreetly, because our men were at risk, our teams were at risk, and even the partner we were working with was in risk because of the political tension. It was a high security situation. And in fact, we did our distributions under the cover of night to protect the families that we were going to be serving. So how we overcome COVID, we worked with partners. We found partners to continue to execute our work. How we overcome conflict. Again, it's locating partners, but it's constantly assessing risk, building out project plans, following that timeline. What sets us apart is that we don't just go in. Disaster doesn't strike and you see ShelterBox. We take our time to assess the disaster, then go in and assess, does this make sense for us? Is it safe for us? Is this best served by a different partner? And we make these calculated decisions to ensure that our aid is going to the right people and that we are safe, and it's our response is best for all concerned.
Okay, thank you. Thank you so much. Mm-hmm. If anybody have any additional questions, great. Ms. Joan, welcome.
Well, thank you. I know I came on a little bit late. I'm from the Chicago area in the United States. Sherry, here's my question. What's the budget framework that you folks have just to get the stuff there? The kind of money that it takes not to just buy the boxes we see behind you and the things in the boxes, but to get people there to move it from one country to another.
Yeah, and that's going to look different in every response. So in an emergency response, like for Ukraine, that's why we had that restricted funding created, so that we said we need to raise $3 million for this initial Ukraine response, because we knew that we needed to cover aid, but travel and remote work for that duration of time. But that's going to look different for Syria, where we're working strictly with partners, or in Yemen. So what goes into this process is we have operations teams, not team, we have multiple teams dedicated to specific areas of our work, whether it be conflict related, remote work, working with partners, weather related, or geologically related. Based off of their expertise, they are able to build out an initial timeline, top down kind of budget planning of saying, we know it's going to cost this much in aid if we're sending in these custom aid packages. Okay, how many teams do we need? Okay, this is how much we can estimate for travel. Once we have that initial project planning built out, that's when we're going to start our work. Thankfully, our teams are experienced and they work fast. Exact dollar amounts, I really couldn't tell you because it does look different, but know that we have the funding to get folks there, and being this charity navigator, 4-star rating charity, you know that we are spending most of our money in getting the aid to the families that need it, very low operations costs.
Thank you.
Dear friends, colleagues, we have had an amazing session learning from Cherie, all her vast experience with Shelterbox. Thank you, everybody, for all your questions and for joining us in this session. I hope you all found this session really, really meaningful. And you may be hearing this on your favorite podcast service, watching it in also in our YouTube channel or in our club website. If you choose to watch it in our club website, we hope and we highly encourage you to keep scrolling down a little bit further and you will find the discussion forum. You're welcome to leave any comments on what you think about this program and also to reply to other people's comments. And this will be a very interactive way to keep the momentum of this very important project. And please, one more time, I would like to open a big applause to our speaker, Cherie. Thank you so much for taking the time to share with all of us during this speaker session. With that, I'd like to thank Cherie once again for being here with us. And I would like to give her the floor once again for some final remarks.
I just want to thank you all again for having me, for allowing me the time to share my story and answer your questions. I know I only had so much time, but my heart's so big and my love for this mission is so big, it's hard for me to contain myself. So thank you. I just want to let you know it is a joy to start my day and spend this time with you all. Thank you all for the good work that you're doing around the globe. And together, we can imagine Rotary.